to say that the British people are not represented by President Bush, for sure, and definitely not by Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Brothers, sisters, assalamu alaikum. It's not a great time to be a revert. Our timing could have been much better, but we are living in a troubled world. And I thought tonight that I would talk about America's war on terror, because as we all know, it is a war on us. And so it's always good to know who your enemy is and what they're up to and what they've been up to. And there's quite a long history with America, not just against the Muslims. 9/11 was an atrocity, but it came as no surprise. The only surprise was it didn't happen earlier. And after I have gone on into detail about America, you'll see that this atrocity could have been committed by any one of a number of different people. What I would ask you to do is to keep an open mind and do not see me as any kind of enemy or traitor of the West. Indeed, I consider myself to be a friend of America, and as a good friend, we should be able to tell each other what the problems are. And that includes dropping any sort of pretense about what Britain and the Commonwealth owes America following the events of World War II, because there are many on both sides of the Atlantic and the Pacific who are suffering from political amnesia when we are told that we should all, New Zealand included, support America just as it supported Britain and the Commonwealth during the World War II. Far from giving support, the truth is America only joined in the war in December 1941 after the horrific events of Pearl Harbor. And Hitler had declared war on the US. It wasn't the other way around. But first things first. Is America a peaceful nation? George Bush wants us to believe that America is a peaceful nation, a nation which loves its freedoms and liberties. And he recently described the US as the most free nation in the world. He said America was a nation built on fundamental values that reject hate, reject violence, reject murder, and reject evil. We will not tire, he said, in defense of America. Well, what I would like to know is if America is such a peaceful nation, why has it been at war every single year for the last 50 years, trying to civilize countries and bring democracy across the globe. During this dark period of history, More than 20 countries have been bombed by America. Starting in 1945, China, then Korea, Guatemala, Indonesia, Cuba, Belgian Congo, Dominican Republic, Peru, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, Lebanon, Libya, El Salvador. Have I said Nicaragua? Iran, Libya, Panama, Iraq, Kuwait, Somalia, Croatia, Bosnia, Iran, Sudan, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, and of course back over to Iraq again. And that list doesn't include the sort of military recklessness which is becoming common in the United States. Like in Italy in 1998, when 200 people were killed by a US warplane as they traveled in a cable car. Or in China in 2001, when a Chinese military pilot was killed by a spy plane collision. And that doesn't include the proxy bombings of Iraq by Israel in 1981 using the US-made F-15 bombers and the brand new F-16 fighter bombers either. And let us not forget that America is the only nation in the world to have used nuclear weapons on civilian populations twice, as the survivors of Nagasaki and Hiroshima will be bearing testament in the anniversary in the next few days. And it would be a mistake to believe not one, but two atomic weapons were dropped on civilian populations to bring a rapid end to the war, because history has shown us that Japan was on the verge of capitulation, a fact which was very well known by the US president at the time. According to Admiral William D. Leahy, who was chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and President Truman's chief of staff, his personal advisor, he said the Japanese were already defeated and ready to surrender because of the effective sea blockade and the successful bombing with conventional weapons. In being the first to use the atomic bomb, we had adopted an ethical standard common to the barbarians of the Dark Ages. And this is one of their own describing this. Sir Winston Churchill, my mother thinks he's wonderful. If you look into his dark history, he was the first one to gas the Kurds in Iraq. But that's another story. Sir Winston Churchill said, "It would be a mistake to suppose that the fate of Japan was settled by the atomic bomb. Her defeat was certain before the first bomb fell." And General Leslie Groves, the chief of the Manhattan Project, the project which developed the bomb, said the real purpose of building the bomb was to subdue the Soviets. So there you have it. Now you know why the bombs were dropped twice on a civilian population. America, as we all know, has weapons of mass destruction. More than 2,000 nuclear warheads and chemical and biological weapons, as well as some very nasty top secret weapons. One of the reasons it was going into Iraq was to find weapons of mass destruction and chemical weapons. Of course, we know there were no WMD in Iraq. But isn't it ironic that the US Marines have been using chemical weapons to subdue the Iraqi population? The latest arsenal they've used is a very nasty napalm type of weapon called MK-77, and they used that in the fight in Fallujah, where the local people, as well as the resistance, put up a heroic resistance. And even today, American troops do not have full control of Fallujah. But going back, 2,000 nuclear warheads. This is not the arsenal of a peaceful nation. Its weapons stockpile is greater than the collective armies of the next 27 countries. As I said before, I'm often told that I am unpatriotic to criticize America, and by doing so, I am aiding and abetting the enemy. But just who is the enemy these days? A few years ago, the Americans would have told you it was communism and communists, or anyone who threatened US national security. John Stockwell, a former senior CIA station chief and author of In Search of Enemies, estimates that the United States is responsible for the deaths of more than 6 million people in third world nations around the globe. US leaders blithely justify all of this under the rubric of national security, a concept invented in 1947 with the inception of the CIA. A congressional investigation conducted by one Senator Church in 1975 found that during the 14 years prior, the CIA had been involved in 900 major and 3,000 minor operations throughout the world. Extrapolated over the CIA's 50 plus year history, that amounts to more than 3,000 major and 10,000 minor covert operations carried out in full contempt of US and international law. And since 9/11, Washington has vowed to continue its murderous feeding frenzy by delivering the perpetual war on terrorism. And it's hardly surprising that we, the world's 1.2 billion Muslims, believe we are the new targets in this never-ending war. Anyone with a beard or a hijab is seen as the enemy. So-called moderate Muslims in Britain were shaken to the core when Yusuf Islam was deported by the US and described as a threat to national security. This is the man who is the former pop star Cat Stevens, the man who brought us Moon Shadow and Morning Has Broken, a man who has done so much charitable work to alleviate pain and suffering around the world. And just a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Zaki Badawi, one of the senior Muslims in Britain, who was flanked after the London bombings by the chief rabbi on one side and the Archbishop of Canterbury on the other to give an interfaith statement condemning the action, he too was stopped and turned away from America. The revered scholar Yusuf Estes, another Muslim revert, wasn't even allowed out of the US to go to Bahrain last year and share his knowledge and spread his message. He still made it though. He traveled to another state and he got through. Both British men and Yusuf Estes have been treated with absolute contempt by the US in a humiliating and degrading way. All three have beards. I cannot support the current American government, and nor can I stand shoulder to shoulder with a president who has made the world, my world, your world, less safe. After 9/11, we've had the Bali bombings, the Marriott Hotel bombings in Jakarta, Indonesia, the attacks in Istanbul, the bombings in Madrid, and now the London bombings. Since 9/11, I am more fearful for my safety and that of my family and friends in London, and elsewhere in the world than I ever have been under 30 years of Irish terrorism. And thankfully, the American-backed Irish terrorism seems to have come to an end following a dramatic statement today by the IRA to say that they are getting rid of all of their arms and they are going through a political route. Apart from the obvious fear we all feel, there is another side effect to this ill-conceived war on terror. Our freedoms and liberties have been carpet-bombed by George Bush and his eager-to-please sidekick Tony Blair. The pair have become Al-Qaeda's finest recruiting officers. And if Tony Blair is regarded as George Bush's poodle, what does that make Howard in Australia? You know, you've got a lot to be thankful for that you have a leader in this country who has stood up to the bully boy tactics of America and said, no, we don't want to get involved in your illegal wars. We also have Guantanamo Bay, a boil on the face of human rights. Its continued existence, torture and abuse of Muslim prisoners serves only to make the lives of every Westerner working in Muslim lands a target for so-called extremists. And it's no coincidence that in those harrowing videos of Western hostages, all the victims have been made to wear orange boiler suits, just like the ones in Guantanamo Bay. In Britain, we have our own Guantanamo Bay. It's called Belmarsh and Woodhill, where even today, around 40 Muslim brothers have been detained without trial, without charge, in legal limbo, not worthy of a banana republic. And it is set to get worse. And Blair made that quite clear just a couple of days ago when he said he was going to bring in new legislation to make us all feel safe. Of course, what that means is this will restrict our freedoms and liberties. And if it's happening in Britain and America and to a certain extent in Australia, you have to be on your guard to make sure it doesn't happen here. And when you get idiots like Winston Peters standing up and coming out with the bile that he came out with yesterday, you have to be on your guard and you have to be able to rebut these allegations. I'm sad to say that the roots of his speech yesterday were founded on the ridiculous allegations of a Muslim who went on TV on Sunday on a program called Agenda and said that he had seen and knew of radical Muslim groups preying on university students in New Zealand. The man is a liar and he has to be brought to account. He is one of our brothers and he must be brought to account because he is damaging not only everyone in this room and our children, he is damaging himself and his family and everybody else from his community as well. Then we have the disturbing images in Iraq that came out of Abu Ghraib. The Bush administration just does not seem to realize the irreparable damage that that scandal created. As you all know, I was captured by the Taliban, and according to Bush and Blair, the Taliban was the most evil, brutal regime in the world. Well, I can tell you here tonight, thank Allah I was captured by the most evil, brutal regime in the world and not by the Americans. We have continued rumors about the abuse and torture and gang rapes of prisoners in US custody. There is a group of brothers, 2,000 brothers, called the Ghost detainees. They're called the ghost detainees because nobody knows that they officially exist. The International Red Cross, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International have all tried to make inquiries of the whereabouts of certain individuals, and they keep meeting a blank. There is growing evidence that 2,000 Muslim brothers are being held and tortured in US holding facilities around the world. One place in particular is the British Protectorate of Diego Garcia, where we think that some Muslim brothers are being held on US ships in the large holding bays in that protectorate. Other areas, other prisons, it's called rendition. We think that the Americans have sent these prisoners into the hands of the torture specialists of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and possibly Thailand. There are 2,000 of our brothers who are missing. We don't know where they are. All we know is that they are in American custody. America cannot behave outside the law, as United Nations General Secretary Kofi Annan said last September. And yet they do. And the media in America is too tame to tackle the president and ask him about these atrocities and human rights abuses. Kofi Annan has done his best to criticize the American administration, but the UN is seen as a toothless organization now. One of the most revered statesmen in the world, Nelson Mandela, has also waded in and criticized the US president, who is sounding more and more these days like the sheriff of Dodge City than the president of the most powerful country in the world. He is economical with the truth, and if truth is the first casualty of war, then I can tell you now, by the time George Bush has finished with his speeches, it's in intensive care. He barely acknowledges the fact that the UN called the war on Iraq illegal. Obviously, being president of the United States means never having to say sorry. It would be great to turn around now and say, well, at least Afghanistan is improved and Iraq is on the way to full recovery. The truth is, both countries are sinking into quagmires of Vietnam proportions. You can have the biggest and the best bombs in the world, but if you can't see your enemy, what use are they? Using a boxing analogy, Bush has gone into the ring not with a heavyweight, but with a hornet he can barely see. He can lash out, and while it's not going to kill him, it sure as hell is going to sting him and make his life miserable. You would think he would have learned his lesson by now, but he hasn't. And I really wish that he'd read his daddy's memoirs before setting out on such a disastrous war as Iraq. George Bush Sr. wrote, "Trying to eliminate Saddam would have incurred incalculable human and political costs. Apprehending him was probably impossible. We would have been forced to occupy Baghdad and, in effect, rule Iraq. There was no viable exit strategy we could see, violating another of our principles. Furthermore, we have been self-consciously trying to set a pattern for handling aggression in the post-Cold War world. Going in and occupying Iraq, thus unilaterally exceeding the United Nations mandate, would have destroyed the precedent of international response to aggression that we had hoped to establish. Had we gone the invasion route, the United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land. And that's what George Bush's father wrote about why he wasn't going to invade Iraq. As I keep saying, I am not an enemy of America, nor am I a traitor to the West. The enemy is within. The enemy is running office, is running government in Washington, in London, in Australia, and in other countries where the leaders are craving for American attention. Our freedoms are under attack from Bush and Blair. They are being trampled by the likes of Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld. The battle to preserve our freedoms, and when I say our freedoms, I mean the freedoms of the Muslims, the freedoms of the West, the freedoms of everyone in America, Britain, New Zealand, Australia, across Europe, all our freedoms. The battle to preserve our freedoms aren't being fought on the streets of Kabul or Baghdad. They have to be fought in our streets, in our towns and villages and cities, right across Europe, across America, across Australia, even in New Zealand. You cannot afford to sit back and be relaxed. When I became a Muslim, like all of you here, the reverts anyway, we joined the biggest and the best family in the world. And if somebody hurts one of us, they hurt all of us. And if our brothers and sisters are in pain in America, we all feel that pain. We don't sit back and do nothing. We try and work and activate and motivate ourselves to do something, even if it's something as simple as writing a letter into the local newspaper. Every one of us is needed on the front line to salvage what is left of Western democracy. And we can only protect our civil rights through speaking out. And when American and British troops do retreat, and they will, they'll eventually leave Vietnam style from Iraq. I, for one, will be jumping up and down and cheering as the last American helicopter takes the last soldier scrambling off the embassy roof out of Baghdad. At least those soldiers will be able to come back to find that we have preserved their freedoms and liberties. I and many others like me are pilloried and attacked for speaking the truth, but I will continue to do so without fear or favour, not just for my brothers and sisters in America, in Britain, in Abu Ghraib, in Guantanamo, and wherever else Muslims are being persecuted, but I will do it for every single individual oppressed by tyranny. Because as we know, as Muslims, we believe in social justice for everyone, not something exclusive to ourselves. We have to be courageous in these difficult times and do what we can to stand up against this imperialistic tyranny or this racist hate from idiots like Winston Peters. English philosopher Edmund Burke once said, "All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing." The invasion of Iraq, illegal and immoral, had nothing to do with national security or freedom of democracy or human rights or weapons of mass destruction or defeating terrorism or disarming Iraq. The motivation was money and oil and imperial power and creating and strengthening America's watchdog in the Middle East, Israel. Israel, a country which has the fourth largest army in the world, a country which is using its army, its weapons on women and children. The real traitors are those who forced Iraq, the war on Iraq, on an unwilling world in violation of the UN Charter and international law. What those traitors have done is illegal, immoral, unconstitutional, and treason. I am told that somewhere in Texas there's a village looking for its idiot. Now that might be funny, but it misses the point. George W. Bush is not an imbecile, he's a traitor. And the same goes for his poodle, that vain, self-serving little hypocrite, Tony Blair. Before the war started, we knew it would divide NATO, fracture the United Nations, separate us from our friends in old Europe, across Asia and the Middle East. Ordinary American and British citizens and other allies of this ghastly coalition have become targets of hate. Mercifully, New Zealand was not foolish enough to get involved in this military adventure of America's in Iraq. And again, I salute your political leadership for doing that. It's not often we praise the politicians. It's not often they get things right. But their decision has put New Zealand on a platform. It is admired internationally for making this stand. Although, as I said yesterday, the only other government to make a similar stand against America was the Taliban, so beware. I just hope you haven't got oil in New Zealand. The Arab world is incensed. The Muslims are devastated. Well, everyone apart from one Mr. Osama bin Laden. He's never been more popular. He must be laughing his socks off now wherever he is. But the Americans can't find him. 6'4" tall, rides a white horse, carries a kidney dialysis machine around with him. But he still remains elusive. And the interesting thing is, I was asked the other day what I thought of Osama bin Laden. Loved or loathed, the man cannot be ignored. And he is a man of many, many words, but he is also a man of his word, and with chilling accuracy as well. But none of his reasons for waging war on the US have anything to do with freedoms, with liberties and democracy, as George Bush and Tony Blair like to claim. But they have everything to do with US policies and actions in the Muslim world. Notably, the unlimited support for Israel's repression of the Palestinians and the destruction of Iraq. Tony Blair was challenged the other day because he's in denial. He refuses to accept that the London bombings have anything to do with Iraq. And he said, look at 9/11. That happened before Afghanistan, before Iraq. Yes, Mr. Blair, it might have. But the roots of 9/11 are wrapped deeply around Palestine and the injustice of the Palestinian people. And until there is justice for everyone, there will never be any peace. There are thousands of young men eager to become Al-Qaeda recruits and wreak terror on you and me. Well, not you, but me. I live in Britain. You're okay. The cabal of neoconservatives who planned the never-ending war on terror, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Libby Pearl, Jeb Bush, even before George W. Bush became president, knew the American people would not stomach a never-ending war unless there was a new Pearl Harbor. 9/11 supplied that. 9/11, I said before, came as no surprise to me. And it certainly came as no surprise to the Bush administration. The government was warned so many times that something awful, something huge and catastrophic was in the offing. They were warned by the outgoing Clinton administration. They were warned by senior intelligence operatives from 11 different countries. And they were specifically warned by an FBI agent that one of them was planning on flying a hijacked airliner into the World Trade Center. This has all come out in the 9/11 inquiries. They not only ignored the warnings, they made sure that day that no fighter jets were scrambled to stop it. If they had just done nothing and allowed normal procedures to unfold, the Twin Towers would still be standing and thousands of dead Americans and other nationalities would still be alive. This is not the actions of a peaceful nation. Peaceful nations don't kill Arabs for oil, persecute, abuse, or torture Muslims, or destroy their own people's civil liberties and freedoms. Iraq is not a one-off. It is part of a long, bloody history of foreign policy being conducted for the financial benefit of the wealthy few. It is a new colonialism. Ordinary American citizens and the media need to wake up and smell the coffee. It's time for Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the whole oil mafia to be removed from office and indicted for treason. Inshallah. I mentioned Nelson Mandela earlier, a revered statesman. Now, the new legislation that Tony Blair wants to introduce is to stop incitement to what he calls terrorism. That means I would probably be locked up if I had praised Nelson Mandela 10, 15 years ago. I would have been accused of incitement. And when I talk about Palestine and the heroic Palestinian resistance, I've got no doubt that Blair and his cronies might try and use this new legislation against me. Well, we'll see what happens, because I am not going to remain silent over Palestine. I was one of the first journalists into Jenin, into the refugee camp, after the siege had been lifted, when 53 Palestinians, women and children, had been butchered, slaughtered by the Israeli army. I saw with my own eyes the injustice that is happening out there, day in, day out. But going back to Nelson Mandela, once called a terrorist by Margaret Thatcher, now the former South African president and Nobel Peace winner, he said last year, "Why does the United States behave so arrogantly? Their friend Israel has got weapons of mass destruction, but because it's their ally, they won't ask the United Nations to get rid of them. They just want the oil. We must expose this as much as possible," said Nelson Mandela. He went on to describe Tony Blair as a US foreign minister. I once called him the 51st governor of the United States, but I think that title has gone to President Pervez Musharraf. But he saved his most scathing words for Bush when he called him a president who can't think properly and wants to plunge the world into a Holocaust. Do you think Holocaust was too strong a word? Let me refer you back to John Stockwell, a former CIA station chief and author of In Search of Enemies. According to his estimation, the United States is responsible for the deaths of more than 6